1 Samuel chapter 27 for this evening. We continue our study through the life of David. He has been destined by God to sit as the next king over the nation of Israel, and he has been on the run for a little over 8 years at this point as Saul pursues his life. Coming out of chapter 26, David had yet another opportunity to take the life of Saul and just be done with all of this running, with all of this nonsense. But when we studied last week, David sparing the life of Saul for a second time. And now we come to chapter 27, where we see a turn, a twist, something we would not have expected from David, sort of a zigzag in his life, going from where the Lord had him and where the Lord wanted him to where David thought it best to be. So let's begin reading chapter 27, verse 1. It says, "Then David said in his heart," so he didn't say this out loud, he just said this in his heart, but remember, the Lord sees the heart. He knows the thoughts of the mind, like he already knows where we're going with it as our thoughts are forming. So David says this in his heart, and it gets recorded for us in the Bible. Here's what he said in his heart. "Now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul." It's a far cry different from the David that we left in chapter 26, where he just took it for granted that, "Lord, I'm going to ask you to deliver me from tribulation, and you're going to do that. You're going to deliver me from the hand of my enemy. I trust you, Lord." And here we are in chapter 27, and here's David throwing his hands up and saying, "There's no end in sight to this. This is never going to end. Saul's just always going to be chasing me down one after another. I'm just narrowly escaping Saul, by outthinking and outmaneuvering him." But David's feeling the weight of all of that pressure. He's really having kind of Peter walking on the water moment, where for this moment he takes his eyes off of the Lord and he starts to look at the wind and the waves. He's looking at circumstances, and now he's troubled, and now his faith is stumbling. Now, if you're familiar with the Psalms at all, you know that as God-centered and faith-centered as David was, he was just as much prone to depression, just as much prone to feeling hopeless at times and feeling as though the Lord had abandoned him at times. It might have something to do with the fact of him being human. I don't know. That's just a guess. But, I mean, this is the guy that penned the famous line, my God, why have you forsaken me?" That would be the statement that Jesus would take for himself and speak from the cross. But remember, that was David's before it was Christ. That's how David was feeling in that moment. And you'll read through his Psalms and you'll read a lot of that stuff from David. "Where are you, God? Did you give up? Are you through with me, Lord? Why have you forsaken me?" And David sees it that he's narrowly escaped death for over 8 years. He doesn't know what we know. We know that 16 months from now, this is all over for David, but he doesn't know that. So the way he sees it is that he's not sure that, quote unquote, he can keep this up for much longer. That all it's going to take is one bad day, you know, one bad strategy, one slip up, one mess up, and Saul's going to spear him through. He probably should have never given Saul his spear back. That's my thinking, but he did give Saul his spear back. Now, the truth of it is that God would not have allowed Saul to kill David. Of course, we know that. God has promised David the throne, so there's nothing that's going to stop that from happening. But you know how we people are. We know the Lord's already won. We know the victory is in him. This is the victory that overcomes the world, even our faith. But how quickly we get shaken in times of pressure. In David's defense, it's not just him in this. He's not like David out there hiding solo from Saul. You know the story. He's got 600 soldiers with him, plus women and children. So, you know, he's got thousands of people with him that he's trying to think about here on this occasion. He's trying to hide probably thousands of people who are on Saul's hit list as well. And that is a lot of pressure to have on you. So David thinks there's only one way to avoid impending ruination. There's only one way to avoid Saul capturing me and capturing us and just running us all through. So he says in verse 1, "There is nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel." He'll give up the chase at that point. If I go into Philistine country, Saul will finally give up the chase. And David says, "And I shall escape out of his hand." Okay, God decision or David decision? What do you think? Yeah, I think I heard the right answer in the crowd there. This is a David decision. I think we can safely assume that based on the fact that he didn't pray about this decision at all. He said this in his heart, in his mind. He didn't even speak it out loud, probably for fear that the Lord would try to shut it down. No, this is a David thing, and you want to, at this point, just like reach through the Bible and shake him and say, "David, wake up, what are you doing? You have a prophet, a priest. You have the Urim and the Thummim, more than likely. You have various methods with which you can communicate with the Lord and get the Lord's direction on this. So what are you doing? Why are you deciding when the Lord should be deciding?" But when we begin to think things like that, we realize that, well, wait a minute. It's actually even easier for us to talk to the Lord and get direction from the Lord than it was for David. And yet, how often do we make decisions without praying about it, without talking to the Lord about it, without running it by Him to see how He might want to lead us? So, at that point, you know, fully humbled, we climb down off of our pedestal and we realize that the Lord is teaching us something very important through this story in the life of David. So, let's learn the lesson of how things go. All right. Well, be on the lookout for this as we study. Not just this week, next week as well. Let's learn the lesson of how things go when we exclude the Lord from our decision making. How many times is the Lord going to give us this lesson as we study through the Bible, right? David's decision is escape. We read that word twice in verse 1. Escape, escape. He wants to escape the pressure that he is under here. And it seems like that would always be the right decision. Make the decision where you get to escape the pressure. But I must tell you tonight, that's not always the right decision. Not in instances where the Lord intends that pressure for you. You know, David is into a 10-year period of God training and preparing him for his future role. And apparently one of the things the Lord wanted to get David really prepared for was handling pressure. Handling men and soldiers, militaries that wanted to kill you. That was part of what the Lord was working on here. And here's kind of the deal with this. When God intends pressure and you choose to remove yourself from that pressure, you're not merely escaping that pressure. You're also escaping His will. And you're quite possibly even escaping, or maybe abandoning would be a better word, your calling. And at times that may very well affect the timing of how the Lord wants to use you in that calling that He has placed on your life. So we have to ask ourselves the question here as we study through, why won't we just let God be the God of our life? It's such a simple concept. Why is it so difficult to do? But David here has made his decision. There won't be any talking him out of it. He will now go and try to make a league with the Philistines. He's going to learn a valuable lesson in choosing the easy path. Escaping pressure, choosing the easy path. Did you know that the easy path is actually an illusion? There's no such thing as the easy path. I know Jesus mentioned it in Matthew chapter 7, verse 13. He called the road to destruction the easy path. But you get the point of his statement, right? The easy path is actually an illusion. The easy path seems easy, but it is actually the path of destruction. And then contrary to human thinking, the path that seems difficult is actually the path that leads to life. So David thought things could not get worse for his situation. Just escape the pressure and everything's going to be okay. But he's about to find out the hard way, pun intended, he's about to find out the hard way that his escape from the pressure isn't going to be an escape at all. All it's going to be is an exchange of one pressure for another kind of pressure. It's exchanging the pressure that God intended for him to receive the pressure that David is now bringing upon himself because of his life decisions. As a Calvary Chapel pastor put it, he's jumping out of the frying pan and what? And into the fire. So verse 2, David arose and went over, he and 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. Verse 3, and David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel, and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. All right, so let's refer back to already acquired knowledge from past studies. And think about Gath for a moment. Gath was the hometown of a man by the name of Goliath, a giant. And David has killed Goliath. Goliath's four brothers probably still live there in Gath, because this isn't a whole lot further removed from that moment of battle there where David took Goliath's life. And if you remember, early on in David's running from Saul, he actually attempted to go to the city of Gath and to speak to this king, Achish. And I'm not sure why David seems to have a fascination with the city of Gath, but he does seem to have a fascination with that city. The first time that David tried fleeing to Gath, this was chapter 21, it was a disaster for David. It didn't help that it seemed like he strolled into Gath like twirling the sword of Goliath. I'm not sure what his intentions were there, but it was when David heard the Philistines explain to Achish who David was, and they kind of said to the king, this is the guy that the Hebrew ladies, the Jewish ladies, sing about as the Philistine killer. When David heard that, David realized, I'm not getting out of Gath alive unless I come up with a really good plan, like a brilliant plan. And the brilliant plan that David came up with there in chapter 21 was to feign insanity. So he was scratching at the gate of Gath there, drooling, foaming at the mouth. And I love the statement of Achish there in chapter 21. He said, look, if there's one thing I don't have a shortage of, it's madmen. This guy's a crazy person. What are you bringing him to me for? Like, get him gone yesterday. Get him out of here. So David's quick thinking there spared him. Well, here is David trying his fortunes in Gath once again. It may or may not be the same king, Achish, because Achish is actually just a title that they used to speak toward their king. Achish to the Philistines was sort of as Caesar was to the Romans, right? They all got that title. But million-dollar question would be, it didn't work last time. Why did it work this time? Why does Achish and the people of Gath receive David and all of his people, you know, thousands of people, immigrating to Gath, and they just let them in and they let them live with them right among the Philistines there in a major city, one of the five major cities of the Philistines. Why did it work this time? Well, we're going to see in chapter 9 that there were at least some leaders, some Philistine leaders, who weren't all that comfortable with David and didn't really trust him. They were still suspicious of him. But apparently, we just have to deduce that there were enough Philistine leaders and enough of the right Philistine leaders that did believe David's story. He probably came with the story of, we're enemies of Saul. We've been on the run. We're at war with them. They're trying to kill us. And, you know, we've come to you. We're defecting on our people. We're looking to turn over a new leaf. And it would seem that that story was good enough for Achish. He probably wants to believe David and all of his people in this retreat to Gath. He probably wants to believe that because these are trained soldiers. This is more people. This is a military alliance for them. And he could be looking at the benefits to the Philistines if David's story is true. And then very quickly, before we move on, maybe you disagreed with me when I'd mentioned in the past that the Bible gives us the number of 400 men that initially showed up and joined with David in the caves, and then eventually 600 men. And we talked about that. I told you that it only ever gives us a count of the men, but that my guess would be that just in, as in typical Jewish fashion, they never really counted a total number of people. They always gave us the counts of the heads of the households. So they were giving us a number of households and not a total number of people. So my suggestion to you was that it wasn't just 400 people and then 600 people, but that it was 400 soldiers, then 600 soldiers, along with all of their family. So I've been telling you that David's got thousands of people with him, right? A little mini nation. And I believe verse 3 makes that case very strongly for me. We were just told that it's not just David and his 600 soldiers. It's all of their families, too. They're all here. Thousands of people. I highly doubt that they weren't with David and the 600 until now. I highly doubt that. I highly doubt that this is the moment where they decide to join up with David and go along with him. I think they were there all along, as I've been sharing with you. But either way, we have this community that David is leading. It's a persecuted community, but it's a community nonetheless that the Lord has been raising up in the midst of some pretty intense persecution. And we read in verse 4, "And when it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, he no longer sought him." Saul gave up the pursuit. So it worked out exactly as David was hoping for, right? Well, yes, and definitely no. Yes, and definitely no. He wanted Saul to be done chasing him, and Saul's done chasing him. But now, see, the problem is David has opened himself up to many more problems, and in many ways, much worse problems. If David would have just hung in there with the Lord and just accepted the pressure that the Lord was allowing, who knows? 16 months, Saul would have been gone and David would be right there in Judah, right there in Israel, ready to go. Maybe the Lord wouldn't have even drug this out for 16 months. Maybe this is a delay that David's causing. Who knows? The Lord could have taken Saul the next day. But either way, David is going to find himself in 16 months upon the death of Saul, trying to tidy up a bunch of loose ends, dealing with a lot of problems that his zigzag to Ziklag is going to cause. So just a bunch of problems that David has brought on himself. It's pretty common for us to want something really, really bad and then regret it. I'm having that issue with my 2009 Jeep Patriot. Wanted that thing so bad. Got it. It broke down. I'm still trying to get that thing running. Pray for my 2009 Jeep Patriot. I think New Yorkers are about to find this out. They voted for a Muslim socialist as their mayor. They wanted it. They wanted it really bad. And boy, are they going to get it. I don't think they realize what they have desired there. Before he was martyred, Charlie Kirk said this about Mamdani. He said, "Mamdani is a Muslim socialist. If he wins, you'll see what we've been warning about." And I got to tell you tonight, Charlie was right. New Yorkers are going to rue this day. They're going to rue the day that they picked a Muslim socialist to lead them. Verse 5. Then David said to Achish, "If I have found favor in your eyes, let a place be given me in one of the country towns that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you?" All right, obviously some time has passed here. David and his people have been living peacefully among the Philistines in Gath. And they were behaving themselves. They knew that they were under a watchful eye. They knew that the Philistines were observing their every movement. They knew that they were restrained in their lifestyles. They had to kind of toe that line. They didn't want the Philistines to get suspicious of them. But as some time has passed, and David is hoping to get out on good behavior here. He's hoping that the behavior that they have displayed for the Philistines is enough to win some favor. And he wants to create some distance and some freedom from the Philistines for him and his people. So he has requested a rural location. He's requested the country. Why do you think he might do that? He wants to set up his own little City of David kind of thing, you know, a little mini Davidic sanctuary city. Well, he's doing that because they have been pretending. They've been pretending that they're not enemies of the Philistines. They know full well they're enemies of the Philistines. Their deal with Saul, that has not changed that. So they're pretending that they're not enemies of the Philistines. Their lifestyles are quite a bit restricted and constrained, and they want the freedom to be able to, you know, basically live out loud as Jews. They want the freedom to kind of begin to pursue their own endeavors without the Philistines watching and controlling everything. And they want that freedom of expression. And you can't do that when you're smack dab in the middle of a capital city, a major city of the Philistines like Gath. And you know David's a smooth talker, you know that. So David frames a very great rationale here. He says, "Achish, thank you so much for being so hospitable toward us. Thank you for taking us in. But there's no reason for us to be taking up your space and drawing from your resources here in the wonderful city of Gath. You know, we've worn out our welcome. Please just, you've seen we're good Philistine citizens. Just let us go. Give us some kind of deserted little area. Give us some rural region where we can settle down and kind of start our own thing. I think we've proved ourselves to you by now. You know you can trust us, so I think this is in everybody's best interest." And we read in verse 6, "So that day Achish gave him Ziklag. Therefore, Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day." That would be at the time of this writing. Now, we don't know much about Ziklag. The origin of that word is uncertain. We're not completely sure about what it means. We think the word might mean winding, but again, we're not completely certain about that. And there's some pretty good debate as to where Ziklag was even located. We're not completely sure. That's like still being investigated. But there is a small consensus, I guess, that Ziklag was southwest of Gath in the Negev and in the general direction of Judah. So this move would put David, you know, kind of zigzagging from Gath back toward Judah. It would put him closer toward the people of Israel, but still safely in Philistine territory. Of most importance here, Achish agreed to David's request. So David and his people now have their very own city where they can be openly Jewish. They can just start living the way that they want to live. They don't have to be quite so worried about, you know, everyone keeping secrets and make sure the kids don't say anything that the Philistines hear and get us in trouble. And this is just a chance for them to experience some freedom of expression. We read in verse 7, And the number of the days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. You add that up, that gives you 16 months. And that is the 16 months that I've been talking about all along, last week and this week. Now, it is true, there could be a little bit of a period of time between chapter 26 and chapter 27. There's no way to know that. But for sure, once David and all of his people reach the city of Gath, it is going to be 16 months that David and his men are with the Philistines. What ends that? What brings David back to his own people in Judah and Israel? The death of Saul. So Saul's got 16 months to live by the time that David and his people show up in Gath. Verse 8. Now David and his men went up and made raids. So if you are wondering, how's David funding this little mini Davidic sanctuary city? Where are they getting their food? Where are they getting their clothing? How are they supporting this little city that's taking off there in Ziklag? Well, here's your answer. They were going on raids. They were going and attacking communities and taking, as you're going to see, livestock, food, clothing, these kind of things. So they were making raids for food and supplies, it says, against the Geshurites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. For these were the inhabitants of the land from of old, as far as Shur, to the land of Egypt. So David and his people, they're not attacking Philistines, and they're not attacking Israelites. The whole point of their relocation to Philistine country is to avoid war with either Israel or the Philistines. So they're making sure to stay out of both of those situations. But who are they attacking? People who were in the land from of old. What does that mean? Canaanites. These are people, Canaanites, that were in the land, in the promised land, when the second generation of Israel stepped into, finally went into, crossed over the Jordan, and began the process of possessing the land of Canaan. And as David sees it, they're fair game. We're not gonna stir up the hornet's nest of Israel. We're not gonna mess with that. We're not gonna stir up the hornet's nest of the Philistines. We're a pretty small number of people, but we can start picking away at Canaanites. They're fair game. It says in verse 9, and David would strike the land and would leave neither man nor woman alive, but would take away the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, the camels, and the garments, and come back to Achish. Now, is what David is doing here a good thing? Is this an okay thing for David to be doing? Well, it is a very, very complicated issue. And though it's tough to know all the full intricacies of these situations, let me just say this. I'll make this statement again. These are Canaanites. These are Canaanite people that David and his soldiers are killing. And I do have to remind us that God did not want any of the Canaanites to remain in the land. When the second generation began the process of possessing the land, God's command to them was drive them out or wipe them out. I want all of the Canaanites gone from the promised land. And here we are, hundreds of years later, at least 300 years later, and there's still Canaanites in the land. They're still alive. They're still side by side, coexisting with the nation of Israel when God intended that land to be theirs. The Philistines as well, of course. But we must view this as the Canaanites still being on God's hit list. Did anything change that? When God said, I want them out of the land one way or another, driven out or wiped out, did anything change God's mind about that? I don't see how that's possible. The Lord doesn't change his mind. So if you ask me, the Canaanites are still on God's hit list, so to speak. So I don't think God would consider what David and his soldiers are doing to be sinful, but rather, more than likely, actions that are accomplishing obedience to the original command of God to the second generation of the nation of Israel. That command to wipe the Canaanites or drive the Canaanites out. And just a reminder, God does not still do it this way, thank the Lord, but at this time in this situation, the Lord was using the nation of Israel as his instrument to deploy his wrath upon a people group that the earth would be better without. I thank God he doesn't still do that, that he doesn't, you know, we talked about this before, he doesn't still call upon the church to be his instrument or vessel of exacting his wrath upon sinners. Aren't you glad? I made the joke before when we were studying this earlier in Samuel that if that was the case, then like this wouldn't be Bible study for us. This would be like weapons training, strategy planning. We'd be deploying people. We'd be sending them out to exact God's wrath. Thankfully, God doesn't do that anymore, but this is the way he was doing it back then. So I'm going to give you an unpopular opinion on this. You won't hear this much, which means there's probably a good chance that I'm wrong about this and haven't thought something out, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, that these raids that David and his men are doing, which are essentially annihilation campaigns where they leave nothing alive, I believe these are actually accomplishing God's original plan. They're being obedient to that original plan, and they're benefiting the nation of Israel. And therefore, specifically for this setting, I believe that what David and his men are doing here is a good thing. I believe it's a good thing. I personally believe that David is accomplishing some overall kingdom productivity, even though I also equally think that David is out of the will of God. I think he's zigzagged away from the will of God, and yet being out of the will of God is still managing to do something productive. Now, I won't teach that spiritual lesson to you tonight, that if you're out of the will of God, you can at least take the lesson of David and be doing stuff that's kingdom productive. I'm not going to teach you that lesson. If you're out of the will of God, the only advice, the only counsel I'm going to give you is get your rebellious rear end back in the will of God, wholly, completely, totally. That's going to be my advice to you. But I can recognize that in David's running, not just from Saul this time, but from God's will for his life, that he is actually still accomplishing something productive in this zigzag to Ziklag. Now, before we continue reading, notice that when David and his men would return from these raids on Canaanite people, that they would come back, it said, to King Achish in verse 9. They would return back to King Achish. And what that's telling us is that Achish, Gath, the Philistines, are still monitoring David and his people to some degree. They're still reporting back to King Achish. And one of the things that they're going to have to do, like right away, is explain where all of these goods are coming from. This is the city. They're out on their own. They don't have jobs. They don't have factories. All of a sudden, all of these goods are showing up. And he's going to have to explain that. Where's all this stuff coming from? David, what's happening here in this city? Where's all this food coming from? Where's all this really nice clothing coming from? So, verse 10, when Achish asked, "Where have you made a raid today? You know, where'd you get all this stuff?" David would say, "Against the Negev," or the Negev of Judah, or against the Negev of the Amalekites, whatever that word is, or against the Negev of the Kenites. So long story short, what David's doing here is he's telling Achish that what they're doing is they're performing these raids on Jewish cities. Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're going out, you know what? They kicked us out. They're after us. They're trying to kill us. We're done with them. They're enemies. So any chance we get, man, we're attacking those Jewish cities. We're wiping out all the Jews. We're just hardcore Jew killers now. We're taking all of their stuff. That's where all this stuff's coming from, Achish. And Achish loves it. He loves it. David, this is awesome. You're helping us out here. You're killing Jews. You're plundering their goods. So David is doubling down on the whole masquerade, passing themselves off as Jew killers, as enemies of the nation of Israel. And Achish, I think he's hearing this and believing this because he wants to hear it and believe it. This is good news for Achish that David, the mighty warrior, this is no joke. David's really on Achish's side. Of course, it's not really the truth, but Achish believes it completely. Verse 11. And David would leave neither man nor woman alive to bring news to Gath, thinking, lest they should tell about us and say, so David has done. Such was his custom all the while he lived in the country of the Philistines. That right there is very important information. I don't know if you noticed this, but I was very careful when I was discussing the productivity of David in going around and killing Canaanite nations, killing everything, and then spoiling the goods. I was very careful to use the word accomplishing, what David was accomplishing in his time out of the will of God was productive. The reason I was careful to use that word accomplishing is because I didn't want you to think that that was David's intention. It wasn't. That wasn't David's intention. When he was attacking Canaanite cities, he wasn't thinking, hey, let's do this. While we're, you know, experiencing this freedom, while we got our own little mini nation happening here, why don't we make these strikes on Canaanites so that when I'm the king over the whole kingdom, we will have made progress. There will be less Canaanites to deal with. We can focus on the Philistines then. That was not David's intention. We were just told what David's intention was for wiping out every person, man, woman, child. Why did he do it? Because he knew if he left one of them alive, that that one was eventually going to get back to Achish in Gath and have a conversation. You think David is anti-Israel? You think David and his men are anti-Israel? You think he's attacking Jews? You're nuts. That's not what's happening. David's not attacking Jews. David is doing something that's actually helping the Jews out. David's doing something that's actually benefiting the nation of Israel. He's wiping out Canaanites. David knew that news could not get back to Achish. So that's why David was wiping out entire communities. So his motives weren't the greatest, but I think what he's accomplishing was still progress for the kingdom of Israel. And then we read in verse 12, and Achish trusted David, thinking, he has made himself an utter stench to his people Israel. It really stinks what he's doing to those people. Therefore, he shall always be my servant. So Achish completely buys into it. He thinks this is great. David is just a beast. He's killing off Jews. That's helping us Philistines out. And he is forever ruining any chances that he might have to go back and be a part of the nation of Israel again. He is burning all of his bridges back to Israel. They will never accept him after this. So Achish is thinking, David is permanently ours. This is great. You know, he's going to be one of our warriors, one of our people forever. Get this guy citizenship paperwork. Let's make this official. This dude and his people, they're Philistines. So all is well, right? Arlen, I thought you said that David's venture away from the will of God was going to open him up to all sorts of additional problems, and in many ways more complicated problems. Well, all's not all well. It may look like it as we finish up chapter 27. But what do you think is going to come from this? Achish trusting David. It's got to be a good thing, right? It can only be a good thing. Nah, that's not true. What do you think is going to come from Achish trusting David? Here, let me ask you this question. What do you think is going to happen the next time that Achish has to go to battle against Israelites? Who do you think he's going to call up? Who do you think he's going to want to deploy against Israel? How about the guy that's killing entire cities of Israelites? How about the guy who was the Philistine killer, the expert at killing Philistines, who is now the Israelite killer? So they think the expert at killing Philistines. Who do you think is going to get deployed? Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Prepare yourself for it. David's easy path is about to get a whole lot more complicated in chapter 28. And let's go ahead and study that next week. Would you stand with me? And let's close in prayer. Sorry, I'm not going to get you out of here before the rain. Y'all heard that, right? But I will get you out of here early tonight. Let's pray.